Tonight is March the 6th, right?
Yes.
March 6th. And this is a shiur about, what do we call it? We called it the, what do you call the yachas between
Mordechai?
The kesher between Mordechai and Esther. Okay. So Purim, as you know, is in 2 weeks. As I told my son this evening, 2 weeks from right now, I'll be recovering. In the Megillah, we know that Mordechai and Esther had a very fascinating relationship, and they were affected profoundly by the Purim story. Now, we know that Esther was Mordechai's niece, and we know that Esther was an orphan from birth. Her father died while after conception, and her mother died during childbirth. So she had no parents to speak of. And Mordechai took her, as the Megillah says, he took her levas, as a daughter. But Chazal darshan, that he took her levayis, as a house, and we know that bayis is another name for isha, for a wife. And he married Esther, and that is a permitted relationship. An uncle and a niece are allowed to marry. In fact, the Gemara considers it to be a preferred marriage, an uncle and a niece, because really for Shalom Bayis purposes, the most preferred type of relationship is one where the husband and wife share the most they possibly can with their background. That would be the way to start off with the best possible chances of Shalom Bayis. It doesn't mean that people who share common backgrounds are not going to have trouble, and it doesn't mean that people who share disparate backgrounds will not be able to get along. But it means if you want to give it the most chance of working out, you look for the most commonality you can in their backgrounds. And therefore, had it not been for the Isser of Gilui Arayos, had it not been for that, then what we would recommend as the best possible marriage would be a brother and a sister, because you can't have a more common background than brother and sister. But that, of course, is usser. So the closest relationship, which is still mutter, is an uncle and a niece. And therefore, the Gemara talks about it as being preferred and being common in their day. Bas achoso, marrying your sister's, a man marrying his sister's daughter. So be a woman marrying her sister's, her mother's brother. And that was a very sought after type marriage. And that's what Mordechai has with Esther. That means that from the beginning of their marriage, they share a lot in common. They understand each other, and they have a certain connection that would not be shared with another type of relationship. Since Mordechai raises Esther, because her parents die when she's born, then it's even more, because she actually grows up in Mordechai's house, and then they marry. Now that particular piece, that she's raised by Mordechai and then Mordechai marries her, that mimics a pasuk that we quote in the Haggadah. Anybody know which pasuk I'm talking about? In Maggid, we quote a pasuk that mimics this story. The pasuk there is talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu and us, Klal Yisrael being the woman, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu being the man in the relationship, as always is the case with Hashem and us, like in Shir HaShirim, where Hashem represents the male side of the relationship and Klal Yisrael represents the female side of the relationship. And there in Maggid, we quote a pasuk from Yechezkel about a man who finds a young girl who's been abandoned, and she has nothing. She has nothing to wear. She has nothing to eat. She is lying, and that's the pasuk of Misvoseses b'damayich v'almar lach b'damayich chayi, that would pasuk which we quote during a bris milah, that he finds her and she has nothing, and he takes her in, and he clothes her and he gives her what to eat and raises her. And then when she gets older, they marry. And that's a mashal of what happens with Hashem and us, that he finds us in Egypt where we have nothing, we have no mitzvos, we have no way of supporting ourselves, we have no autonomy, we are slaves. And then he takes us out, raises us through the midbar, gives us the Torah, and marries us. So Mordechai and Esther really represent the marriage of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. In a certain way, Mordechai and Esther's relationship reflects the greater relationship of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. The Gemara tells us that Esther was a tzanua. Esther was a very modest person. And the Gemara says that, how do we know she had tznius, that she was modest? Who knows? That's Rus you're thinking about.
Yeah, that's.
But with Esther, it says, because Ein Esther Magedes Molaratav Esama. She wouldn't give away where she was from. That's what the Gemara identifies as tznius, as modesty, because she wouldn't tell Achashverosh, even though Achashverosh pressured her to give away where she was from, that she wouldn't give it away. And the Gemara says that. Where did Esther get this midah of tznius from? So the Gemara says, because of the tznius that Rachel had, so because of that, she was zocha, and she had Shaul. Shaul comes from Binyamin, who comes from Rachel. And because of the tznius of Shaul comes Esther. The tznius of Rachel is that she gave away the simanim, she gave away the signs to her sister Leah. That's considered tznius, that's considered modesty, that she gave away the signs to Leah. And then Shaul, it says that he also had tznius, and
he didn't tell about the melucha.
That's right, because he didn't tell about the melucha. He wouldn't give away. After he became king, Shmuel told him, you are the king, but he wouldn't tell what happened. He didn't tell his father, his
uncle.
Right, his uncle, thank you. He didn't tell his uncle what happened. And that's also identified as tznius. All three cases are cases of not taking advantage of what you have. Meaning that Rachel could have kept the signs for herself and taken advantage of what she had. Instead, she gave it away to her sister. Shaul could have said that he's king, and then he would have been given all the kavod and honor from his uncle right away. He kept quiet about it. And Esther doesn't give away where she's from, even though, had she done so, she would have been elevated in the eyes of Achashverosh and be given greater standing in Achashverosh's eyes. It's interesting that both Shaul and Esther don't say something, and that's called tznius, while Rachel does say something, and that's called tznius. Tznius is not defined by silence or speech. It's a little bit more subtle, the understanding of what tznius is. That can be a shiur in and of itself, to define tznius, and I'm sure all of you have been in a shiur, and probably more than one, in defining what is tznius. And this is the Gemara that is drawn from primarily to define what the word tznius means, modesty. But the Gemara says that Esther was tzanua. Esther was taken by Achashverosh. She was taken when all the girls were taken. She was taken as well. And she was taken to the house where the women were going to prepare themselves for Achashverosh. It was a humiliating, horrible fate. Nobody wanted their daughter taken, not Jew and not non-Jew. Everybody hid their daughter. Achashverosh had to send around soldiers to find the girls, because no one wanted their daughter taken, because it was almost certain that your daughter would end up being alone for her entire life, because the girls were taken. And after the one episode with Achashverosh, they would be put aside, cast aside, and unless they won the competition, and it was a pretty hefty competition because it was all the eligible women in the world. So unless they won the competition, they were cast aside. Who would be confident enough to say that my daughter is going to outshine all the other ones? Especially since it's almost impossible to win such a competition. Because if Ahasuerus is such a despicable person, that, and he is so shakua in his taiva, he's so involved in his desire, that he's got this thing going on, going from one woman to another woman to another woman. It is according to Derech HaTeva, according to the natural order of things, it should be impossible for him to be satisfied with one person. And so nobody thought that their daughter would emerge as the queen. And therefore, no one wanted their daughter taken. Esther was discovered and dragged to the palace against her will. It was humiliating, and it was a terrible, terrible fate. Of course, we know that this was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan. And Esther, it was a nace, it was a miracle, one of the hidden miracles of the Megillah, that Esther was chosen. That any woman was chosen was a miracle. And that it was Esther, of course, was a miracle in and of itself. And so she now becomes the queen.
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to get caught up on a small detail. I never noticed, did Mordechai give her a get, or what happened with that?
No, that's what we're going to talk about right now.
Oh, see, we're going to mention that. I'm just curious.
Now, Esther was taken against her will. Mordechai was not a Kohen. He was from Binyamin. Now, the rule is that if a woman is molested against her will, God forbid, then she is still permitted to her husband, unless her husband is a Kohen. Except for that situation, she's still permitted to her husband. So even though Esther was taken by Ahasuerus, she was still permitted to Mordechai. And so therefore no get was issued. They were still officially married. And Ahasuerus now takes Esther. Esther is in a dire predicament. She is married to Mordechai. She is taken by Ahasuerus. And she's now forced to be with Ahasuerus. Again, it's a humiliating way to be treated, and it's a humiliating situation to be in, and especially for a tzadekes like Esther, imagine what she has to be going through to be dealing with this. It's a foreign man. We're talking about a person, again, who is shakua in taiva, who is very into just he's a person who's not a refined person. And he or she's stuck with this guy. And that's what she has to deal with. This happens, the Megillah says, in the seventh year of Ahasuerus' reign. The Gemara tells us that when this happened, once she's taken to Ahasuerus and she becomes the queen, she has more freedom. Until then, she was sequestered with all the other women preparing for Ahasuerus. But once she is taken as the queen, she now has a certain degree of freedom. And the pasuk says, "Vesmamar Mordechai Esther osa." The word of Mordechai Esther would do. The Gemara says, what does that mean? The Gemara says, "Shai samara dam nida lachachamim," that she would still ask her taras hamishpacha shailas to Rabbanim, even while she was with Ahasuerus. Not for Ahasuerus's sake. Ahasuerus was doing an avera anyway. But she did it. Why would she show her shailas to Chachamim? What's the point of doing that? So the Gemara says, the rest of the pasuk is, Kasher Haisav Amna Ito, as she was, she remained loyal to him, to Mordechai. So the Gemara explains, Shaisa Omedes Mecheko Shal Ahasuerus, she would get up from the embrace of Ahasuerus, V'toveles, and she would go to the mikvah, V'yosheves Becheko Shal Mordechai, and dwell in the embrace of Mordechai. She would go from Ahasuerus to Mordechai. Tosus explains when it says she went to the mikvah, what did she go to the mikvah for? What was she going for? There's no requirement of going to the mikvah just because Ahasuerus was molesting her, but the reason why was just for, the Tosus says, for cleanliness sake, just so that, because here she was involved with this Russia with Ahasuerus, now she was going to the tzaddik, to Mordechai, she bathed just to be clean from Achashverosh before she goes to Mordechai. So this is what Esther would do. She would get up from Achashverosh, bathe, and go to Mordechai. It's like, just imagine, it's such a demeaning way to live. It's such a terrible fate to be in.
Did Achashverosh know? Like he...
Achashverosh did not know. Achashverosh did not know. Mordechai, of course, knew, but Achashverosh did not know. And here, that's what she would do. What a horrible, horrible fate to be in. Here, we're talking about a tzaddikus and Mordechai the tzaddik. Imagine from both their perspectives, from her perspective, what she's going through, this just sickening prospect, and what he's dealing with. His wife is constantly being taken by this Russia, this Achashverosh. What a terrible, terrible predicament. And these are the heroes of the Purim story. It is within this context that the Purim story happens. That goes on, that system goes on for 5 years. From the 7th year of Achashverosh's reign until the 12th year of Achashverosh's reign, that system goes on. A little more than 5 years. It goes on from Teves of his 7th year until Nisan of his 12th year. So for 5 years, they're dealing with this system, a sick system, where Esther is constantly going from one to the other. Every time Achashverosh summoned her, during those 5 years, Esther went against her will. She never was interested. She never went voluntarily. It was always under the threat of death. It's not that Achashverosh constantly said, "If you don't do what I say, I'm going to kill you." But because it was understood that he would kill her, it was under the threat of death. And she only went because she knew if she wouldn't go, she'd be killed. And so she went. Okay, so that the Gemara discusses. Why was it? No, that's a good question. The Gemara asks that question. Why is it permitted?
Actively.
Right. So why is it permitted that's one of the three cardinal sins a person has to give their life up for?
Yeah, that you could cooperate. Yeah.
Right. So one answer given is that being passive about it is not required. One is not required to give up their life. So that a woman would not have to give up her life if she's passive. There's another answer because he was a non-Jew. There's different ways of dealing with it. But the primary point is that it was passive. That's the main thing, which is also why she was permitted to Mordechai. Nisan of Achashverosh's 12th year, which is more than five years after this all starts, at that point, then the Purim story really begins. Haman is appointed second to the king. Haman wants to kill all the Jews because Mordechai won't bow. And Haman does his goral, he does his lottery, and when Mordechai finds out about it, he wears his sakva efer, his sackcloth, and Esther wants to know what's going on, and now they go back and forth, and Achashverosh tells Esther, you got to go before Achashverosh. Mordechai tells Esther, you got to go before Achashverosh. So Esther says, she gives reasons why not, but finally Mordechai explains to her, you have to go. Rashi explains that is, who says you'll still be queen if we wait any longer? You got to go now, because who says that you'll still be able to be in this position later? Who knows? You've got to seize the opportunity and go now to save the Jewish people. And she sends back to him, I'll do it. Lech kenosas kol ha'yudim, go gather all the Jews and fast for 3 days and I'll go. And then she ends off, v'chasher avadati, avadati. And just like I was lost, now I'll be lost. And the Gemara explains, Kasha avadati mi beis abba, just like I was lost from my family, from my household, when I was taken by Achashverosh before, now avadati mimcha, now I'll be lost from you also. The last remnant that I had, that I was connected to my people, now I'm going to lose that also. At least I had you. But now, when I'm going to be taken to Achashverosh, now I'm going to go willingly. I'm going to initiate. I'm going to go to him. And when that happens, Esther knew the halacha. When that happens, since I'm initiating, that's considered to be willing. And if a woman willingly goes to another man, then she becomes prohibited to her husband. And so now, with this act of going to Achashverosh, she is now prohibited to Mordechai forever. So Esther really gives up what you can call the ultimate sacrifice for a living person. Usually an ultimate sacrifice means death. But here, she was essentially dead while alive. she was walking around, that she gave up everything. She gave up all she had. The last connection she had, which was at least in secret, she would go back to Mordechai. Now, forever, she's lost to Mordechai. She's in.
Any way to salvage that?
Can't salvage it.
Like, even if they had a get, nothing?
Nothing.
But I thought...
If Mordechai would give her a get.
Right.
If Mordechai would give her a get beforehand, yeah, but then she still couldn't go back because she was with another man. A man can only remarry his wife if she was not with another man.
Oh. Again.
I thought you still can't choose to do that.
Okay, so now the question is, why was she allowed to do that? So this is what is called an avera lishma. An avera for the right reason, which is almost never found. But we have two examples of an avera lishma, an avera done for the right reason, and that is, one is with Yael, which is a separate discussion. Yael in the story of Devorah over there, that was an avera lishma. And then the other example is with Esther over here with Ahasuerus. See, she saved the entire Jewish people. The Shavos Yaakov points out over here, one of the Chuvos points out, that of course, really he's preceded by the Ma'arik who says the same thing, that of course what Esther did was the correct thing to do. We know this was correct what Esther did, because when she goes to Ahasuerus, it says, she went to the courtyard of Ahasuerus, it says, Vatilbash Esther Malchus, she wore royalty. The Gemara says what that means is, she had Ruach HaKodesh, she had prophecy, she had Nevuah. As she's going in, Hashem was with her as she's going into Ahasuerus. So the Mefarshim say, you're going to tell me this was the wrong thing for her to do, and yet she was having Ruach HaKodesh as she's walking into Ahasuerus? That can't be. Well, no one gets Ruach HaKodesh when they're doing a bad thing. You got to be doing the right thing. Clearly this was the right thing for her to do, but nevertheless, there was a consequence. Because the consequence has nothing to do with whether it was right or wrong. It is a fact that if a woman goes willingly, she becomes prohibited to her husband. That's a very bitter pill to swallow. Very hard to understand, but that's the halacha on the Torah. Yeah.
Wouldn't it be considered also that she, like another kind of proof, that she was had a munas chachamim because she didn't want to go originally, and Mordechai said.
Yeah, Mordechai told her to go. Right. Mordechai himself told her to go, her own husband, and he was the Gadol Hadar. He was the Chacham who told her to go. I mean, in a certain way, Purim is the Yontif of Emunas Chachamim. That's what it's all about. And so she goes, and now she's usher to Mordechai. So at the end of the story, you have Revach v'Hatzalah la'Yehudim. You have the Jews have been saved. Celebration. The Jews are partying. It's unbelievable. What a wonderful celebration. A great party. And we celebrate today. And we have a Suda. And there's merriment. And there's the men drink within reason. And there's a degree of frivolity that goes on with Purim. And yet the two heroes of the Purim story, it's a tragic end. It's a tragic end. Esther ends up in the palace of Ahasuerus, unable to go back to Mordechai ever. And Mordechai lost his wife. He never gets Esther back again. That's it. They're separated, and that's the end of it.
She can never leave the palace again?
She may be able to leave the palace, but she can't go back to Mordechai. She's stuck. She lost her husband. He lost his wife. So we have this unbelievable Yontif that we celebrate with intense joy. We talk about Yom Kippurim, like it's like Yom Kippur. We talk about it as this incredible holiday. And yet, the heroes end up losing each other. Esther and Mordechai, we say, no Jew was killed. I mean, they lived. They were all wonderful. But Esther and Mordechai lost each other. You have a wonderful, beautiful marriage, a marriage that is an uncle and a niece that mimics the marriage between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael, this match made in heaven. And at the end of the day, they are separated forever. Right. Makes you want to cry. Right? Who wants to celebrate Purim anymore? Isn't that terrible?
We never do any of this.
It's a terrible.
Maybe in the Olam HaEmes they're together.
Okay, that's for sure in the Olam HaEmes they're together. That's for sure true. But it's still a very sad story. I mean, just think about it. The Esther and Ahasuerus' son, Koresh or Dayavish, it's the second Koresh, the second Dayavish, there was an earlier one, but he had both names. He's the one who authorizes the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. He's a Jew, brought up in the home of Ahasuerus. He's brought up as a non-Jew. He's raised as a non-Jew in the home of Ahasuerus, and he authorizes the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash. But He's not a practicing Jew. And that's the end of the story. It's very tragic. So, and this is Esther, who's called a tsanua. She's going through this. Esther, who is in a certain way held up as the paradigm of tsnius. Rachel, Shaul, Esther. There are examples of tsnius. And Esther's the one who first is dragged to Achashverosh and goes back to Mordechai, back to Achashverosh, back to Mordechai, and then ends up with Achashverosh in the end. Like, zu Torah v'zu schara. This is Torah and this is the reward. It's a very, very difficult story.
I was going to ask about the son because I was wondering if he was a Jew, but you already answered the question.
The son, yeah, because his mother's Jewish, so he's Jewish, but he wasn't raised Jewish. So, how then do I understand it? How then do we go into Purim and celebrate with such a terrible story? The Jews were all saved through this story. Obviously, it's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted, that we should be saved through it. Clearly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu understands that this is what was going to happen. He knew this was going to happen. And he wanted it to happen in this way. How do we understand that? Now, when Esther was taken from Mordechai first, and she's doing this back and forth thing between Achashverosh and Mordechai, and she was taken forcibly from Mordechai at first. At that point, one could have argued that that was a reflection of the Jewish people. If we're saying that Mordechai and Esther represent the marriage between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael, if that's what we're saying, then when Esther was forcibly taken by Achashverosh, then that was a message to the Jewish people that we are being forcibly taken by the non-Jews, that we are being drawn into their culture. And it was reflecting the fact that just as the young girl that the man found and raised and then married, which is us to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that girl now has been taken away, so too we have been taken away from Hashem. And throughout that galus, that 70-year galus Bavel, that we were taken away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it was almost like a warning sign. Make sure you're being forced, because if you go willingly to them, you can't go back. It was almost like a message to the Jews. Don't go to Achashverosh's party. That was going willingly. You understand, if you go willingly, you can't go back. Be careful. Be careful about assimilation with the non-Jews. Understand that you're married to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you're forcibly taken away, you can go back. But if you're going willingly, it's not so simple anymore. The way that marriage of Mordechai and Esther reflected HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael, what happened to Esther would reflect what happened to Klal Yisrael. So at that point, it was a warning. But then the happy ending should have been that just as the Jews go back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Esther goes back to Mordechai. Beautiful. That would have been a wonderful happy ending, and then this circle would be complete, where the representation of Mordechai and Esther, Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that Klal Yisrael gets taken away, but then comes back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kimu v'kiblu, there's a new Matan Torah, a new Kabbalah Satorah, and we come back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But that's not what happens. It seems that the analogy falls apart at the end of the story. And it's only through Esther's sacrifice and Mordechai's sacrifice, that they give each other up, that Klal Yisrael is saved. So this brings us to the crux of the matter. We know Ish v'Isha, Shalom b'neihem, Shechina b'neihem. Man and a woman, when there's peace between a husband and wife, the Shekhinah is there. We understand that. Shalom bayis is a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to maintain the shalom. It's no different than any other mitzvah that we do. Keeping Shabbos is a mitzvah. Keeping kashrus is a mitzvah. Shalom bayis is a mitzvah too. And we know that shalom bayis is not a simple thing. It's elusive. And it takes a great deal of work. And we all know that. Every single one of us in our marriages, we work. And don't ever think there's anybody out there that has a beautiful marriage that doesn't work on it. Everybody has to work on it. There's no such thing as an easy marriage that just they just fall in love and they have live happily ever after and it's beautiful and there's never it's no such thing. It takes work, and every single ounce of work we put in is a mitzvah. It can be argued that the most important relationship that we have with another human being is our spouse. There is no greater relationship than that. No relationship more important than that. When two human beings agree to marry, when a man and wife agree to, when a man and woman agree to marry, what they agree to is that they are agreeing that their destinies will now be shaped together. That their lives will now be shaped together. They're going to make active choices to make sure that their paths are in sync and in line and together rather than divergent. When you have a very, very good friend, you can have a very good friend, but the friend can move away. It happens. You can have good friends and then they drift apart. Husband and wife make an active decision that they are going to make sure that their relationship thrives, grows, and they remain together. And that takes a lot of work. But there is a relationship that exceeds and is more important than even our relationship with our spouse. And that is our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu exceeds even our relationship with our spouse. Now, normally, the two things don't come in conflict with each other. Normally, because we, both all of us and our spouses, we want to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so our paths are together. But ultimately, the goal in life is to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the reason why my relationship with my spouse is so important is because it's a mitzvah. That's why. It's not separate and apart from the fact that it's a mitzvah. It's not that my relationship with my spouse is important and Torah is important and it happens to be that it's a mitzvah. The reason why it's important is because it's a mitzvah. Because we define what's important in our lives only by what the Torah says. The Torah says it's important, then it's important. Torah doesn't say it's important, it's not important. And the Torah says the relationship I have with my spouse is of paramount importance. That's why it's important. But it's only because the Torah says so. The reason why that's important to know is because if there would be a highly unusual circumstance, very, very unusual, where the Torah would say that it is better not to have a relationship with my spouse, then that takes precedence. That takes preference. That comes first. Because what the Torah says, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, exceeds the importance of what goes on with my spouse, because the importance of my spouse and me is only because of the Torah. And therefore, in the highly, highly unusual circumstance where the Torah says these two people should not relate to each other, then that trumps everything. And Mordechai and Esther were faced with just such a circumstance. Amram and Yocheved, Moshe's parents. Yocheved was Amram's aunt. An aunt and a nephew is Giloy Arayas. An aunt is not allowed to marry her nephew. A nephew is not allowed to marry his aunt. An uncle and niece are permitted. Aunt and nephew are prohibited. They were a relationship which was usher, but it was before the Torah was given. And therefore it was okay, just like Yaakov married two sisters. So it's okay. They separated in Egypt because of the decree of Paro, and then they got back together and Moshe was born. There is a... it's not really a medrash. The Ibn Shayam says, one of the Rishonim says, you know that later in the Chumash you have Eldad and Medad. In Parshas Vahaloscha, Eldad and Medad are interesting. Just the names are interesting. I like the Eldad and Medad. An interesting episode with Eldad and Medad. Eldad and Medad, the Gemara tells us, were half brothers of Moshe Rabbeinu. Half brothers. It's Machlokes Harishonim whether they were half-brothers from Amram or from Yocheved. It's Machlokes. But the Ibn Shayyam writes the Mepharshim say, why were they half-brothers? Because when the Torah was given, Amram and Yocheved had to separate. They had been married for a long time, but he was her nephew. They were asked to each other once the Torah was given. They had to separate. When they separated, one of them remarried and had Eldad and Medad. The Torah says that Moshe heard Esam Bochel Mishpachosav crying to their families because when Arayos became prohibited, many husbands and wives had to separate. Beautiful relationships, wonderful, beautiful relationships. They didn't have Shalom Bayis problems. But the Torah said that that relationship, which was good until now, is now usur. And they had to separate. And that's what happened to Amram and Yocheved. The problem is that Eldad and Medad were, the episode of Eldad and Medad, where they were themselves prophets, they were Nevi'im, took place very shortly after Matan Torah, only a year after Matan Torah. How could it be that they would be so old enough to become part of the Sanhedrin when they were so young? So the Ibn Shalom writes, I once asked one of my Rebbeim, Rashiva of Kolevsky, Zohar Bracha, I once asked him this question, and he brought me in the Ibn Shalom to show me. The Ibn Shalom writes that that Moshe Rabbeinu already told Amram in Mitzrayim that in the future the Torah would be given, and then he and Yocheved would become asur to each other, and already in Mitzrayim they separated from each other for that reason, and one of them remarried in Heneldad and Medad. That's what he writes. You can ask several questions on that answer, but that's what he writes. But I'm showing you that the concept of a beautiful marriage requiring a separation is not limited to Mordechai and Esther. It happened with Amram and Yocheved and others as well. Because Shalom Bayis is a mitzvah. And if the Torah says that the two of them should not be married anymore, then that's what has to happen. Because ultimately, we do what the Torah says. Mordechai and Esther, in the Purim story, they did have a tremendous amount of Mesiras Nefesh. It was an ultimate sacrifice, giving up your spouse. They each gave up their spouse to save Klal Yisrael. The message was to Klal Yisrael that to come back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu after they did leave Hashem and went to the foreign culture. To come back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you need to accept the Torah to the extent that no matter what the Torah says, even if it says, give up the thing or person which is most precious to me, I'm going to do it. Because the Torah says so. Ultimately, Mordechai and Esther demonstrated to Klal Yisrael what it means to be mekabel the Torah. When you're mekabel the Torah, you're saying that whatever the Torah says, I do, irrespective of how difficult it is, how much it means to me to do differently. And through that, Klal Yisrael was able to have a new Kabbalah Satara, Kimu v'kiblu, Kimu v'asher kiblu kfar, a second Kabbalah Satara at Purim. And that's why Purim becomes the yontif that it is. The intense simcha of Purim is that Klal Yisrael was able to draw from the example of Mordechai and Esther. And even though Klal Yisrael did not have to go through that degree of self-sacrifice as Mordechai and Esther, but they were able to draw from that energy, then Mordechai and Esther were able to give up an incredible amount for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Klal Yisrael was then able to mekabel the Torah that way as well. And so their sacrifice becomes the paradigm of Kabbalah Satara. And that's why it really is a beautiful story. As painful as it is emotionally to think about it, but Mordechai and Esther had a conviction that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says goes because my relationship with Hashem exceeds my relationship with anybody else, even my spouse. So what does that mean? None of us, Baruch Hashem, are in that predicament. And for us, of course, Shalom Bayis is a mitzvah. And all of us should be working on our Shalom Bayis. And all of us, what Hashem wants is that we should have as close a relationship as we possibly can with our spouse. But what it does mean for us is to bear in mind always that it is what the Torah wants. It's not what I want. It's what the Torah wants. The Torah wants me to have a close relationship with my spouse. The Torah wants me to have a beautiful marriage. That's what the Torah wants. And when something happens between me and my spouse, and I'm upset, and I'm hurt, and I feel wrong, and I feel betrayed, and I feel it wasn't right, and all the things that go on between all of us and our spouses, when those things happen, that's where it has to be in my mind. I'm not doing this for me. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Ratzon. Ish v'isha shalom b'neihem, shechina b'neihem. I have a beautiful marriage because Hashem wants me to. And even if I don't feel like it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to. And somehow, some way, I got to figure it out how to make things right. And I'm not saying that it's necessarily my fault or your fault or your fault or your fault. I'm not saying that. It's always a two-way street. It's always, just you can spread the blame around. It's never one-sided. But the Ratzon Hashem is that somehow the two find a way to get back together. That's the Ratzon Hashem. It is the Ratzon Hashem. It's not a selfish thing. It's not because of my emotional needs. It's not because it's a nice thing to have a beautiful marriage. It is because it is the Ratzon Hashem. It is what the Torah wants. And ultimately, we all want to do what the Torah wants. That's Purim. Purim and Shalom Bais. Can I shut this?